The next talk is by Simon Badger, who is going to tell us about non-planar integrands for two-loop QCD amplitudes.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much to the organizer for the invitation to speak to you today. So this is some work that we've done on looking to continue our sort of project of integrand reduction for multi-leg two-loop amplitudes, so looking for automated techniques along the lines of what Nigel pointed to this morning, and specifically try and generalize that into the non-planar sector. And this is work that I've done in collaboration with Gustav Mogul, Alex Ocharov, and Donald O'Connell, all from Edinburgh and also all here this week. Very good. Okay, so just as a brief sort of introduction, just set scene, give a bit of a motivation, at least where I think these kind of computations are important. We heard a lot from Nigel this morning. I don't need to expand on the sort of the need for next to next leading order precision at the moment, given that we are going to have a lot of measurements that are going to be around the 1% level of precision, and our automated next to leading order tools aren't really going to give us all the information that we require. The other thing that we did a lot of next to leading order, especially at very high multiplicity, was make use of leading color approximations. Indeed, most of the really high multiplicity stuff has used some kind of approximation like that. Because all of the corrections you get from sub-leading color are generally smaller than the level of the scale variations that you would get out of those computations, something of the order of a few percent. And I picked a couple of plots there just to show roughly what kind of thing you might expect to do if you can see the plots. You don't have to understand all the things about the processes. But here's an example that we did in next to leading order. So diphoton plus three jets, so a five particle final state. And the corrections over the leading color for the virtuals there do actually change with PT. So we see the larger contributions for the kind of higher energy processes where you might be looking for things anyway. And corrections that could be of order sort of 20%, at least at the level of the virtual corrections. Something that at next leading order you might be able to get away with because you're looking for something of order 20% in your scale variation anyway. But certainly when you go to next leading order, you're looking for that precision prediction, you're really worrying about those sub-leading color corrections. And that was also seen in the context of this four gluon scattering computation at next to next leading order, where they also see a similar kind of effect of a slightly larger increase of this sub-leading color contributions at higher PT. But, I mean, okay, those are just some slight reasons why you might think that these sectors are important. The problem, of course, is that non-planar sector represents significant computational difficulties, but unfortunately it seems we're in the situation where we're going to have to deal with it anyway. Of course, it's not it's not just the double virtuals which cause problems when you go to sub-leading color, but at least for the purpose of this talk, that's where we're going to focus our attention. Okay, so we also heard this from Nigel this morning, that QCD really now is going to go beyond the next leading order precision, and he described how we now have subtraction techniques for getting rid of all of the infrared singularities that appear in the single and double emission contributions to a full cross-section. The problem is that as far as the two-loop amplitudes go, we don't have a large number of calculations available, so we're restricted in what we can predict. The traditional approach for this is to take your Feynman diagrams and run the so-called integration by parts identities, reduced down to master integrals, which we can then evaluate. This has been, you know, highly successful, I think, for 2-to-2 process, but the problem is with that algorithm, it really doesn't scale very well at all with additional legs. So if we are thinking to push on to 2-to-3 or even beyond, I think even at the level of 2-to-3, that's an extremely challenging task, given the fast growth of the kinematic structure. We might want to think of different techniques. I probably should clarify, it's not quite true that only Feynman diagram calculations have been used so far for two-loop amplitudes in QCD, but at least the majority of the calculations have been done that way. So the plan for today is to sort of think about automating amplitude calculations for two loops. As I said, the various strategies, trying to go away from the integration by parts identities, which are computationally extremely intensive, and see how far we can get by joining together on-shell tree amplitudes, together with the integram reduction procedure. So this is trying to generalize those techniques that have been successful at one loop for doing phenomenological calculations. So this sort of goes along with a separate program which was started by David Kosser and Castle Larsen, looking at maximal unitarity. So these are things that are trying to generalize those classic one-loop techniques that we're now using in automated programs. But for purposes of today's talks, I'm going to ignore the fact that we have to evaluate the master integrals afterwards, which of course is a significant complication, and just try and see how well we do with applying these techniques to obtain Mantle expressions for 2 to 3 amplitudes. Okay, so where we're going to go to do this is go to the simplest helicity configuration we know in QCD, namely the all plus helicity configuration. So we're going to take the 2-loop 5 gluon amplitude with all positive helicities. It's a useful place to play around because it does have a lot of the complexities that you need when you hit a QCD calculation, but it doesn't give something that's unmanageable to work with. One simple property, at least as far as the loop integration goes, is that because this configuration vanishes at tree level, we have much simpler infrared structure. So it's not actually a next-to-next leading order contribution at all. It contributes first to n cubed LO, and it's also likely to be very, very small there. But nevertheless, it gives us a chance to do QCD at 2 loops for the first time, at least at 2 to 3 multiplicity. Good. There's another simplification that's kind of interesting that was spotted by these guys back in 1996, which is an interesting connection between the n equals 4 amplitude, but in a higher dimension. So if I take the n equals 4 theory and I shift it up to d plus 4 dimensions, and I compare that with my all plus helicity amplitude, then indeed I do get up to some prefactor. I have to take off the supersymmetric delta function from the MHV configuration, and then I can compare that directly to my all plus amplitude. But this duality was really only sort of known to hold at one loop, and at 2 loops, the amplitude was known for a long time, but we weren't able to see if that structure was going to continue. It does seem that there is some connection to why this all plus amplitude is much, much simpler than you might expect. And we see some evidence that this story will continue at 2 loops, although I won't give you any sort of hints about why the origin of what that simplicity might be. But nevertheless, it's simpler than just this fact, right? If I can pick other finite configurations at 2 loops which don't have this property. Anyway, so we'll come back to this a little bit later in the talk. Okay, so here's my outline. I'm going to start off just by telling you how to do integram reduction for multi-loop amplitudes. And then I'm going to show you 2 applications of things that we can do with that. So the first thing we really wanted to address 2 things as we go to the non-planar sector. We need to deal with a full color decomposition. And we can do this by applying the Kleist-Keif relations inside the cuts that we use to construct the amplitude. And then we're going to look to the non-planar sector and get further simplifications on our amplitudes using this so-called color kinematics duality, so using the BCJ relations in amongst the trees. And then I'm going to just present to you the application that we did to compute the full non-planar sector of the all-plus helicity amplitude for 5 gluons. And just because we had to check if this was the correct thing, the first thing we went to is to check the infrared pole structure. So I'll show you a little bit at the end about how we went about computing the soft region of this amplitude. Very good. Okay, so the integrand reduction story, of course, very well known, and is now really, as I say, the core of a lot of automated LHC tools. Started off by looking back in the mid-90s as introducing a way to get loop amplitudes out of tree-level information via unitarity cuts. Through various double cuts and even triple cuts back in 97, they were able to extract some complicated loop amplitudes from that. More recently, we've seen the split of these two sort of methods of getting loop amplitudes from tree amplitudes. The invention of the generalized unitarity is looking at quadruple cuts, Pachoka, Charles and Feng in 2004, and those generalizations to theories beyond n equals 4 Supiang Mills, where you needed to consider triple cuts and lower lower propagated topologies. The main aim, of course, to end up at this formula here, where we have some amplitude multiplied by some rational coefficients. Those rational coefficients are basically tree-like in nature, so we can extract them in some sort of algebraic operation, and loop integrals which contain all the branch cuts and so on in the amplitude. The goal there, of course, is to find the contour in the integration region of the cut, which isolates the rational coefficient. So that story has obviously been completed at one loop, so that we have a complete method to evaluate an arbitrary amplitude. On the other side, integram reduction is slightly different to that story. We still are doing cuts to extract the information we want from the amplitude, so we still have the property of being able to factorize into trees, and that was really the story from Gilikun-Smelnikov back in 2008. But the thing that's slightly different is the application of this sort of contour integration, whereas instead of trying to isolate the coefficient exactly, we just explicitly extract subtract the pole that we already calculated in order to find the coefficient, or the integrand in this case, of the lower point process. And of course that's what we have to do in QCD. We have to keep going down to the lowest propagator, because we know we're not going to have a simple situation like we do in n equals 4, where this reduction will stop much earlier. So we get a different representation of the amplitude. It's a sum over some topology, some propagators, multiplied by a numerator function. And each of these numerators, as I say, we define by subtracting previously computed poles. Okay, so it turns out on one loop that these formulae are actually the same. All the information contained in these integrands will vanish explicitly after integration, and we get a direct comparison between these two things. At two loops, the story's a little bit different, and I'd say there's two sort of different methods around at the moment for dealing with this problem at multi-loops. The first of those being the generalization of that generalized unitarity picture, the BCF approach, isolating the integral coefficients directly with contour integration, and getting down to the form of integrals times rational functions. And the second of those being the generalization of the OPP, so the Osler-Papadopoulos-Pitao method of integram reduction. And in order to do that, we employ some methods of polynomial division to define the functional form of this integration, of this integrand here, so that we can fit all of its coefficients from the cuts in the amplitude. The thing that is a slight subtlety then as we go to higher loops is that those two formulae are not equivalent as we look, and there are connections between them which are non-trivial that we can extract, for example, from integration by parts identities, but they do make these amplitudes a little bit more complicated in general. So the nice thing is that obviously the way to get to this form is much simpler than that of computing these contour integrals, but doesn't contain the simplest information that you can have in the amplitude. Okay, so I just wanted to tell you a few details about how we actually do that calculation of the integrand. So I'm going to start showing you some formulae. So our general L-loop amplitude and d-dimensions, I'm writing it as a sum over some propagators. I'm going to restrict the number of propagators at some maximal level, because I know that I can't solve cut conditions beyond a certain number of propagators, and I've got a certain number of degrees of freedom in my loop integration. And therefore I will have a maximal topology. So that's the analogy of the pentagon at one loop. I don't have to do it. A hexagon will always directly reduce down to sum of pentagons and simpler topologies. And I've got some numerator function, which, I don't know, maybe I get it from Feynman diagrams, maybe I get it from somewhere. It's a function of some things. It's going to be a function of loop momenta dotted with external momenta. So all my loop momenta here labeled K, all my external momenta labeled P. I might have polarization vectors. I'm going to have loop momentum dotted with themselves. And I make the additional step of separating my loop integration into two pieces, one of which goes over the four-dimensional piece and one over the d-dimensional piece. And hence I have a k-bar, which I call the four-dimensional part, and all the external momenta in four dimensions, so I only ever have loop momentum dotted with k-bar. And the only bit of d-dimensional bit I'm going to have sitting in the so-called higher dimensional scalar products of the loop momentum with the epsilon dimensional piece dotted together. So the game is to now define a parameterization of, you know, more restricted scalar products, irreducible scalar products, for which I can define the rational coefficients in terms of trees. So that's, I'm saying that what I want to do in integram reduction is get from this top line to the second one, but I need to know exactly how to define this delta in order to make that happen. And further from that, go down to this master integral representation, which of course we won't do for today, but let's see how we can define that. So the integram reduction strategy goes like this. It's based on the work from these guys back 2011, 2012 or so. And the idea is to start with a top-down approach, where we take the maximum number of propagators that we have. So for our 5-point two-loop calculation, that's going to be 8 propagators. We identify a basis of scalar products, and we do that by picking some spanning set of vectors to account for the external degrees of freedom. So I'm going to need to do 4 of those for each of my loop momentum, and I might not have enough, because I might not have enough external kinematics on my loop topology to span that space, but Van Neven and Van Mazeren told us how to extend that space with spurious vectors under the integrand, so that we can completely describe all of our scalar products in terms of things of loop momentum dotted with one of these external basis vectors. I'll give you an example on the next slide, so hopefully these variables will come a little bit clearer. So the next step is to try and parameterize the integrand in terms of these variables that I'm calling xij. And we can do that using the propagator information. We want to remove all of the possible things that can be reduced to lower topologies. So all the things that come out of setting the propagators on shell are wanting to remove this information from possible things that can appear in the integrand. So I take some generic parameterization. It's going to be monomials in these ISPs, these irreducible scalar products, XIJ, right? And I'm going to use polynomial division via forming a Grobner basis to remove all the extra information. And then I'm going to define, therefore, a set of monomials, which are a function of the extra-dimensional scalar products and the spanning set of scalar products here, the ISPs. And the coefficients in front of these objects, those are rational coefficients, and those are things that I can fit with tree-level information. So I do that by parameterizing all the possible on-shell solutions and solving this system of putting the numerator and the integrand parameterization on shell at the same time to extract the values for these coefficients. Okay, so I continue then my algorithm going to the lower propagated topologies, extracting subtracting the information that I just calculated, and continuing until I've calculated all the possible integrands I need to define my amplitude. Okay, so the sort of key step that we made, I guess, a couple of years ago was to understand how that algorithm applies generally in D dimensions, which is, you know, the first step we needed to really attack a QCD problem, for which we were using these additional scalar products. I just wanted to give this sort of, like, example of exactly what these scalar products mean for a simple example, which you can see this other box there. I said we've got 4 external vectors, but actually only 3 of them are independent from momentum conservation, so we fill up the spanning vector with this additional vector omega there, so totally anti-symmetric tensor. If I integrate x14, so k dot omega, over the loop integration, then it will vanish, but it's present at the integrand level, and I have to fit the coefficient of it. And I have extra monomials, which will come out of my polynomial division, just from possible monomials that appear here with the extra-dimensional vector as well. So the total number of coefficients there I've got to fit is 5. Okay, 5 different aspects, all of which are related to the cuts on the products of tree-level amplitudes. And these guys are going to be spurious. These guys turn out to be dimension-shifted integrals, and we find exactly the basis of functions we expected for one loop. Okay, very good, but that's just a simple example. So our two loop examples are basically going to be exactly the same. We just kind of have many, many more of these kind of coefficients and scalar products to fit. But as I said, on the cut, these deltas completely factorize into the product trees, and we end up with this sort of simple recursive master formula to apply. All I have to do is remove all of the topologies that appear with more propagators than the one that I'm considering with the present cut, and remove all of that information. This thing here will then just become a polynomial which I can extract with some linear algebra. So we have achieved something here, I think, which we've managed to define these numerator factors, which we can completely determine in terms of on-shell tree amplitudes. That means that all of these things are nice kind of objects to construct amplitudes from. They're all gauge invariant, for example. And there is some sort of slightly tricky parts to that algorithm, in the sense that there's two bit parts where I don't have a unique parameterization for the integrand delta. I told you I needed to choose a spanning set of vectors to define the scalar products. There's freedom for how to do that. And I told you that I was going to use polynomial division, and that means I had to define an ordering to do the polynomial division, and both of those things will affect the parameterization that I have. All are valid. I can fit everything from products of trees in all cases, but some will give me maybe nicer forms for the amplitudes than others, and I have to be careful that I either understand that I have this freedom, but I can actually exploit it in order to make sure I get simple expressions when I'm doing particular examples. Okay, so the next step is, given that I've got an algorithm now that can calculate an arbitrary integrand, I now want to find a way to put all the integrands together back into full color amplitude. So this step goes into the application of the Kleist-Keif relations within the cut, because we can do something very nice now that we have this connection between the integrands and the tree-level amplitudes, namely that we know all the tree-level amplitudes satisfy nice relations. So we can do the same with the integrands, as long as we ensure that the symmetries apply off-shell. So we know it's going to apply on the cut. So in this equation here, I showed you that the product of trees, it's clear that the trees satisfy this information. The only question is, do the integrands apply it off the cut? And that depends on this choice of monomials. So by making a sensible choice to make sure that the off-shell symmetry is manifest, we can make sure that all of our deltas, our irreducible numerators, satisfy equations like this, which just come from applying the KK relation. All I've done in this picture is sum over the different permutations of the four-point amplitude that appears in the center of the cut. And this one here just means that I've swapped the order of those two legs there. And this guy, which is a bit funny, but it's a four-point vertex where I have a little knot in the middle there. So it's only one amplitude, and then this guy's connected to different sides of the two-loop topology. So as I said, once I've got this, then I can write down a minimal set of deltas, which I know span the possible set of cuts that I need to construct the amplitude. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my full color amplitude, and I'm going to say, well, I need to assign some color factor to each of my non-trivial integrands. I've got to contain my propagators in there as well, of course, because I've got to integrate over these things. And some symmetry factor, which depends on the sum over topologies that I'm going to do. So I'm going to have to sum over all the possible permutations, and I've got to add some symmetry factor to deal with that. So the algorithm is then as follows. We're going to assign color factors to this based on the underlying tree structure. Again, because we've factorized into trees, we can just pull out the color factors from the underlying tree object. Because we wanted to exploit this these KK relations, so we wanted to make sure that we factored onto a n minus 2 factorial basis for the underlying trees, there's a nice way of extracting the color factor that we need from the calculation of Dixon, Del Duca, and Maltoni, so DDM basis, which used a trace of adjoint color matrices, so the just the structure constants FABC in some sort of trace there, where I fix two positions and I sum over the permutations of all the intermediate intermediate legs there. So this is the classic n minus 2 factorial KK basis, but with a straight color factor. So all I now have to do is assign products of trees to these kind of guys. So I think it helps to see that in the context of example. So here's how it works for the two-loop Foglen amplitude. I have this set of cuts, and I'm restricting myself to the all plus helicity case again. I always do that because if I was in full QCD, I'd have many, many more deltas than this, but here I've only got 4, it turns out. But I just told you as well that I can eliminate this one of these guys with the KK relations that guy's got, and I've got 3 left. 2 of these guys are already in that nice form, since it's just 3-point amplitudes. I'm just multiplying Fs together, so I've got the color factor already for free. The only one I have to worry about is what to do with this 4-point amplitude there. And there, I just select that tree. I can pick 2 points on this tree to fix that positions of 1 and n, as I showed you in the original formula from DDM, and I just extract the color factor from that. So I know that this guy is color factor can be expanded into one which matches the color factor of the double box. So then I get a nice simple compact formula for a DDM style basis. So a very compact representation of the Foglen color structure, which has all the KK relations in the amplitudes built into it. So it's just 2 of those planar factors going into these color factors and the non-planar guy sitting out on its own with these guys. And if you expand that and check out the symmetry factors, then it agrees with the result that was known previously. Very good. If we run that through for our 5-gluon amplitude, we find slightly more KK relations within the cuts, some which are a little bit more funny, because I have to worry about cuts where I really order the internal amplitude, right? That's what I'm doing. I'm cutting ordered amplitudes. So I have one loop squared topologies. There's no real non-planar in the one loop squared, obviously. But as far as the cuts go, there is genuinely non-planar cuts to do there. But I can eliminate some of these guys using the KK relations. So these kind of couple relations there. So I can eliminate, for instance, this type of topology and one of these guys from my basis. And then just follow that procedure of expanding the underlying trees with respect to that DDM basis to find the color decomposition. And that gives me this nice construction here for the 5-gluon amplitude. As I said, I restrict to all plus because I've decided that these are the only non-zero cuts that I have to construct the amplitude, which I haven't justified to you yet, and I'll carry on to do that for the remainder of the talk. But we do have this nice construction in terms of these DDM basis color factors in front. So the thing that was, I think, nice to see about that is that these integrands that we have are actually really good objects as primitive objects in a decomposition. So we get really kind of compact receptions just by directly matching color factors onto the integrands, which is not something we really thought about doing at one loop. And we do get a lot of information from making sure that we applied all of those KK relations in the tree. And it was slightly non-trivial because we had to worry about making those symmetries manifest off-shell. So that was really the main win that we got from doing that. One might worry about the fact that we knew this color decomposition that had the manifest KK relations built into it, so that DDM basis on the tree. But I think probably that algorithm will work equally well for things with fermions, because we do understand the underlying KK relations, how to represent the color sums in that way. And there was a recent paper from Henrik and Alex Otrov that looked at really constructing those DDM trees in general. And again, you know, knowing the tree level tells us how to do the multi-loop color decomposition. That's basically the other message here, right? We're just, as long as we know the tree level color structure, then we build the loops out of it. Very good. Okay. So the game from here is now, okay, let's try and calculate some of these deltas from the cuts. Good. So for this, we are going to exploit further relations amongst tree amplitudes, obviously. Not something that has been known for a long time, and it's not something that hasn't been done either. So we know that these relations give us a lot of information about cuts in multi-loop calculations in n=4, for example. But we're just going to apply those kind of same kind of constraints to our QCD amplitude and show that they go through exactly as in a similar manner. So we've got Jacobi identities amongst color factors, obviously. And Bernd Kraske and Johansson showed us how we can arrange kinematic numerators in a certain fashion so that those same relations hold at the level of the kinematics. And from that we can derive even further simplifications over the KK relations to reduce to a basis of n minus 3 factorial amplitudes. And here's the example of the tree level amplitude that you get at 4 points. And we've now gone down to just one independent tree, and we get some kinematic factor. So in KK, it was always just sums of trees, you know, plus or minus one as coefficients. Now we've got explicit kinematic dependence in the linear combination of trees, but nevertheless it goes through in a similar way. And as I said, you know, have these identities have always been already been exploited in many calculations for multi-loop supersymmetric calculations. The game here is to try and exploit those that tree-level information inside of our non-planar cuts. And this is kind of how it works. Let's consider that we have this... So this is a 5-point two-loop cut now with 8 propagators. And I've got one middle leg there in the middle pointing out. And I know this tree-level relation. So I know that inside of this tree-level there, I've got the residue of a 4-point amplitude calculation. So if I take the residue of the 4-point amplitude that sits in the middle there, I know on one side it factorizes into the product of trees. I already used that. That's why it's factorized into the product of two trees. So that gives me this side. On the other side, though, I can just apply the BCJ relation, and that gives me a different way to represent the same tree-level information. And that is the tree-level information that goes into this cut here. And this time, that propagator, that sort of that kinematic factor in the front there, has turned into this kinematic factor there, which now is dependent on the loop momentum. Again, evaluated on the particular cut that I'm considering, which is this guy. So I feed that information into the definition of my deltas, and I can completely eliminate the product of trees in terms of deltas that I already know. So I managed to remove the product of trees that would be the product of these trees, i.e. this cut here, in favor of the information from the planar integrand. So the irreducible numerator, which I've already calculated, and I subtract some extra stuff. So what we're doing here really, and I know this slide has lots of symbols on it, but it's got a fairly simple message. If I take two cuts, I know one of them already, I can eliminate the product of tree amplitudes that appears in one of them by applying a BCJ relation to that product of trees and relating it to a product of trees that would appear in this second cut. Then, of course, all I have to do is feed those formulas together to get an expression for the original cut in terms of now nothing to do with trees, just in terms of the compact integrands that I've already determined. So it's not new information that I have to extract. And these guys in general would be some, say, some propagators. And if I really wanted to go to high multiplicity, I would have many, many of these terms. I would have maybe a sum of more tree-level factors. But in each case, I can identify one with another topology and relate everything together. I guess the interesting question then is, can I always get non-planar from planar? Well, do I have enough identities to make that true? I don't know the answer to that question in general, but I do know that it works in our two-loop example that we did. So we got the entire non-planar sector out of the planar. Okay, so let's now go and have a look at the amplitude that we decided to test that procedure on, that 5-blown amplitude. I already showed you this side before, but I'll take a little bit of look at the structure now. So we find that, so the planar sector, which we already knew, built up of these topologies here, each of those guys, so the 8 propagator topology there being the most complicated, the whole thing cuts off at the level of six propagator topologies. And everything with 6 propagators is only 1 loop squared in complexity. And all of the items that sit in the front there have very simple forms. The non-planar sector follows pretty much the same form. We get a slight more complicated structure. There's 2 possible color structures that we get when we go to the non-planar sector. And some extra cuts that come in. I said we had to worry quite a lot about these KK relations to make sure that we had the right basis for these objects here, so these non-planar cuts, which have planar integrals but non-planar cuts. and various symmetry factors that we have to assign when going through that decomposition. Okay, so the planar sector we knew before, built up of these cuts there, and that's where we employed this d-dimensional integram reduction algorithm, and we're very grateful to Yang Zhang for providing us with a base package for doing the complete Grobner basis polynomial division reduction automatically, so we made heavy use of that. We also had to get our tree level amplitudes from somewhere in the d-dimensional case, and that was done through the six-dimensional spin-helicity formalism. We have to go to six dimensions in two loops in order to extract the full d-dimensional dependence. Slight subtlety about the product of trees, but not really a big bottleneck. People studied that a lot at tree level and one loop before, so it's not something new. The other thing, of course, which is actually quite heavy in terms of doing these multi-leg calculations, is dealing with the kinematics, and for that we make heavy use of momentum twisters, which were a really effective way to do the algebra that we needed to do. Non-planar results followed through pretty much the same way. As I said, we got all of our topologies here from the planar cuts, just using the BCJ relations, and made sure that we have imposed all of those off-shell symmetries, so all the KK relations applied and our color decomposition went through in a compact way. And we get relatively compact expressions. I don't expect you to read too much of what's going on in this. But I think the general structure is that we do have some tensor integrals appearing in the numerator of these deltas. These ones are all one loop squared. And there's some other dependence, F3 there, which is some function of the d-dimensional integrand. So I'm going to talk about that. What's my timing doing? I got a buzz from the thing. Good. Good. So, that's okay. So I'll just tell you a little bit about those numerator functions that appear and the connection with n equals 4, which I alluded to right at the beginning of the talk. So we do find a structure here where all of the topologies that are common with n equals 4 are related via some sort of dimension-shifting function F1, which has this very nice symmetric form. The function of ds there is the spin dimension, so the number of degrees of freedom in the gluon, and various factors of these d-dimensional spinner products, scalar products, sorry. And then we see another couple of functions appearing, F2, which is proportional to ds minus 2, and can be related to differences of F1s, and another function, which is ds minus 2 squared, so I think it's really sort of generally one loop squared. And our one loop squared deltas look exactly like the sum of two of those pieces. We can compare that kind of form to the known full off-shell BCJ numerator from Carrasco and Johansson, known in n equals 4, and we do find complete agreement with the calculation there. And in fact, we can see some relation of these guys, F2, from the n equals 4 sector, because they're related by some symmetry. But this F3 thing is really something that's not in n equals 4, so we have to find a different explanation of how we can extract these ds minus 2 squared pieces. Okay, nevertheless, we wanted to go and check this amplitude was actually correct. So we went and looked at the infrared behavior. And at this stage, all the integrals that I showed you, not every single one of them are known at the moment. I put unknown in brackets because I think Johannes is going to fill us in a little bit on his work in calculating those integrals tomorrow. But at least at the present time, I can say that they're unknown. And say that, you know, in the planar case, we were able to use the sector decomposition tools. We used SecDec to do some of these things and fully check all the pole structures match the known form, namely the two-loop one factors onto the one-loop amplitudes. For the non-planar case, it was a bit more tricky. So the non-planar required us to do a lot of permutations and required us to go into areas which have no Euclidean region, meaning that the contour deformation was really important. And that's that part of the algorithm is actually quite slow. So it's quite a complicated task to numerically evaluate, even for one phase space point, the amplitude that we've computed. But we can do something simpler. So I'll just show you quickly, in my last couple of minutes, how to evaluate these integrals in the soft limit. So we don't need to go to a full sector decomposition. We can quickly extract it. Now, we had this complicated F1 numerator sitting in front of some of our functions. Let's see how it works for the two-loop double box. What I want to look at is the soft region, so areas where the loop momentum can go to zero, and I can pick up factors of 1 over epsilon squared. I told you already that my loop integrals were only going to diverge as far as 1 over epsilon squared, not 1 over epsilon to the fourth, as I would have in a most general integral. And it's the F1 function that actually does that for me. It makes sure that I don't have lower orders in the epsilon expansion. So if I take this graph here and I shrink K1 to 0, I find that it factorizes into the product of two one-loop integrals. I know how to do one-loop amplitudes, so I can extract quickly the divergence coming from this triangle, and I relate it then to a dimension-shifted one-loop amplitude. So that's just, I pick up a UV pole here in eight dimensions, and I get a 1 over, and I get a simple constant from this piece. This guy gives me 1 over epsilon squared, so I can extract the 1 over epsilon squared divergence from that limit, K1, shrinking this loop to 0. I have to do the same for the other sector, and I just add them together, and I pick out the leading soft divergence for my integral. And it turns out that simple procedure works nicely for all of our two-loop ones, including the non-planar cases. And we've checked all of that by doing a sector decomposition to just make sure we get it right. Plug these results into our formula for the full color and check that it does in fact have the correct behavior. So that combined with the nice connection with n equals 4 gave us the confidence that we were doing the right thing. So just to finish off, there are obviously a lot more things to do if we're really going to attempt doing next to next leading order 2 to 3. We did understand some nice things about BCJ. It would be nice to really complete this story of making the BCJ symmetries manifest off-shell, and that's work that Gustav and Donal are continuing at the moment. And as I said, it was the presence of those ds minus 2 squared parts in the amplitude that make that story more difficult to do. We can't just reuse exactly what was done in n equals 4, unfortunately. The other sort of real open problem as far as the integram reduction is concerned is how do we deal with these extra information from IBPs. And we completely avoided that in this step, right? I said this was a big problem at the start, and now I haven't raised it again. That was because in this all-plus holistic configuration, the integrand reduced form was actually sufficiently simple to write down a compact representative of the amplitude. I'm not sure that's going to be true in general, so eventually we're going to have to deal with that problem. But I think there's a lot of nice new ideas coming out of this sort of algebraic geometry applications for integrand integram reduction and maximal unitarity, and there's been a few little bits of work there that I wanted to highlight done recently in the last 12 months or so, I think will be very useful in the future. So what did I do today? I said we can get multi-loop amplitudes from tree amplitudes via integram reduction, and I said that we can efficiently apply the KK and the BCJ relations inside the cut to systematically decompose amplitudes into a minimal set of irreducible numerators, and get rather nice compact color decompositions making use of this DDM basis for the underlying tree structure. I showed you the first non-trivial application to the all plus. Obviously, the next steps are to, A, finish this paper, and B, carry on and see if we can get further with the full holistic structure. So, thanks for now.
Thank you very much for your talk, Simon. Other questions?
So this connection to n equals 4, I assume it works similarly for 4 points, or did you look at that?
Yeah, indeed. So at 4 points, again, you pick up the same structure. Of course, with just the 4 point, it's difficult to see that there is a general structure, which I guess why people didn't really look into it before. But yeah, it also satisfies the same properties, i.e. the one loop squared has this ds minus 2 piece, which you can connect to the planar, and the ds minus 2 squared that you can't, but the ds minus 2 that connected to the n equals 4, and the ds minus 2 squared, which is not. Yeah.
More questions? I have a question myself, actually. So I think you're computing in the FDH scheme,
right.
And I was just wondering, is it easy to say what a scheme change would be if one were to use something else, and how such terms would look like?
Okay, so I mean, though we put the external states in D dimensions, we do include the full spin dimension dependence. And as a result, if we set that to 4, we're really in a genuine FDH scheme as defined in the work from Dixon and De Freitas and Zvi and Wong, I think, was also on that paper. If we set DS to 4, we get FDH. And if we set DS equal to 4 minus 2 epsilon, we're back into Toff-Feldman type of scheme. So we do kind of, by including full DS dependence, cover our bases. At least I think so. But
you had the formula in one of the previous transparency where you separate the infrared from the ultraviolet.
Okay. Maybe I did something wrong.
This is one loop or two loops?
It's a one loop, right? Because I'm all plus. So I don't need the full two loop structure.
Two loop is not true anymore. That you can factorize. I mean,
you can factorize in this simple way. No. I mean, there's two different parts, right? You have a two loop, and then you have a one loop squared type piece. Okay. But it's just a one loop color decomposition.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any more questions. Before thanking Simon again, let me just announce that we'll